Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the fourth quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in the listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Friday, March 9th, 2018. I will now turn the conference over to Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. Our fourth quarter and year-end earnings were released yesterday afternoon and have been posted in the investor section of IBI's website. Joining me today on the call is our Chief Financial Officer, Stephen Taylor. Prior to commencing the call, I will ask Stephen to read the following disclaimer about forward-looking statements. Stephen?
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of IBI Group, I'm required to note that some of our statements made on today's call might contain forward-looking information. We caution listeners not to place undue reliance on our forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities laws. For further information on risk factors, please review the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities. I will now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. 2017 was a solid year for IBI. We saw continued revenue growth, solid financial performance, and sustained focus on debt reduction. Yesterday afternoon, management announced that revenue for the year had increased by just over 2% to $361 million compared to $354 million in 2016. The increase is the result of growth in the Canadian market, which saw overall revenue growth by 8.25% in 2017. In Eastern Canada, work continues on a number of significant transit projects, including the Eglinton LRT, the Confederation Line LRT in Ottawa, and the York Region Aviva BRT. We are also on a number of pre-qualified teams for LRT projects in Ontario. We continue to see strong performance in our mixed-use high-rise with major projects underway and plans throughout the Greater Toronto Area. In Western Canada, the mixed-use high-rise market is also strong, and work continues on transit projects in Calgary and Edmonton. Our traditional land engineering work in Edmonton and Calgary is progressing according to plan, and our practice is strengthening in Fort McMurray. It is noteworthy that our intelligence group has been awarded recent projects to deliver province-wide traveler information services in Alberta, as well as a major intelligent transportation project in southern Ontario. Revenue decreased by 7.5% for the year over 2016 in the United States. We have taken steps to reverse the trend, including putting in place a new corporate structure and a new leadership team that is more aligned with our market sectors and business opportunities. In the third quarter, we were awarded 2 BRT projects, one in Los Angeles and the other in Raleigh, North Carolina. We are also seeing new opportunities in the high-rise residential market, especially in the LA area. We continue to focus on certain markets along the West Coast of the United States, which can be supported by our Vancouver office. In the United States, the intelligence practice has continued success with recent awards of a $2.5 million smart city project in Miami Beach, $1.2 million commercial vehicle system, and an extension of a statewide traveler information system in New York for $2 million. We are seeing a continuing stream of opportunities in areas of transportation management, transit systems, and traveler information projects. In the UK, revenue is down by 4% for the year. Financial performance has improved due to effective management costs or controls on costs. We are taking necessary action to diversify the business in the UK and are using the talent pool to support other regions in the areas of healthcare and transportation infrastructure. Our business in India grew significantly in 2017, fueled by the planning and design of smart cities, as well as the installation of toll and traffic management systems, all in support of the major infrastructure program in the country. Middle East remains a strong market for the company with significant transportation and land use planning work in Dubai and Saudi Arabia. In Israel, our work continues on the Red Line LRT project, a transformative transportation project in Tel Aviv. In Mexico, we opened 3 new toll systems in support of the infrastructure investment program of the country. Management is forecasting approximately $366 million in total revenue in 2018. We currently have $331 million committed and under contract for the next 3 years and approximately 10 months of backlog. We continue to look for ways to increase committed work and improve performance in 2018 while establishing new services and business models. 2018 will be a transformative year for IBI as we take steps to become a technology-driven design firm. The transformation will embrace technology in how we work and the services we provide to our clients. We will also take an active role in the tech ecosystems of Ontario, India, and California, putting us at the forefront of new ideas and new solutions for the planning, design, and operations of cities. We will be launching new services for our clients to enhance the operation and performance of cities, buildings, and infrastructure, all part of making them smart. We will be launching some of these new services at our annual general meeting, May 10th, 2018. As noted, 2018 will be an important transformative year for IBI as we become a technology-driven design firm. I'll now turn it over to Stephen to discuss the financial highlights.
Thank you, Scott. Revenue increased to $86.9 million this quarter compared to $86.8 million for the same period in 2016. Due primarily to the growth in the Canadian market. Adjusted EBITDA increased 1.3% this quarter to $7.6 million compared to $7.5 million for the same period in 2016. Adjusted EBITDA increased $3.6 million to $40.6 million in 2017 compared to $39.2 million in 2016. The increase in adjusted EBITDA is as a result of stronger operating performance. The company had net losses of $2.9 million this quarter compared with net income of $7.6 million for the same period in 2016. The net loss is inclusive of foreign exchange losses of $300,000 compared with a foreign exchange gain of $1.2 million for the same period in 2016 and reflects the negative trend in the Canadian dollar currency as the Canadian dollar weakened against the U.S. dollar and the British pound compared with the same period in 2016. In 2017, the company had net income of $11.4 million compared with net income of $3.5 million in 2016. Net income for the year is inclusive of foreign exchange gains of $1 million compared with foreign exchange losses of $7.4 million in 2016. Foreign exchange gain for the year reflects the positive trend in Canadian dollar currency as the Canadian dollar strengthened against the U.S. dollar and the British pound compared to the same period in 2016. In the fourth quarter, basic and diluted loss per share of 8 cents per share compared to basic and diluted earnings of 24 cents per share for the same period in 2016. The decrease was primarily due to a decrease in net income of $10.5 million. The company had $3.6 million increase in losses from the fair value of the liability derivative of the financial liability related to the convertible debentures on the balance sheet and a $3 million increase in rent expense due to the renegotiation of the sublease associated with the onerous lease. Net income was further reduced to the $3.3 million increase in tax expenses. The increase in tax expenses is a result of reduced availability of tax losses, particularly in the Canadian business. Basic and diluted earnings per share increased to 30 cents per share for the year for 2017 compared to 11 cents in 2016, primarily due to an increase in net income of $7.9 million. Net income increased as a result of the $15.2 million decrease in interest expense, offset by a $10 million increase in income tax expense. The decrease in interest expense is a result of decreased interest and the accretion on debentures after the redemption of the 7% and 6% convertible debentures in 2016. The increase in tax expense is a result of reduced availability of tax losses, particularly in Canada. Cash flows provided by operating activities were $3.3 million for the quarter, a decrease of $13.9 million compared to $17.2 million for the same period in 2016. The decrease is primarily the result of an increase in income taxes paid of $5.1 million and a decrease in non-cash operating working capital of $9.6 million, offset by an increase in net income adjusted for non-cash items of $400,000 and a decrease in interest paid of $200,000. Cash flows provided by operating activities for the year ended 2017 were $15.1 million, a decrease of $16.9 million compared to the $32 million in 2016. The decrease is primarily attributable to an increase in income taxes paid of $2.5 million and a decrease in non-cash operating working capital of $19.3 million, offset by an increase in net income adjusted for non-cash items of $3.4 million and a decrease in interest paid of $1.5 million. Interest expense decreased this quarter to $2.6 million compared with $3.1 million for the same period in 2016. For the year ended 2017, interest expense decreased $10.3 million compared to $25.6 million in 2016, as a result of the redemption of convertible debentures in October 2016. Finally, day sales outstanding were 80 days at December 31, 2017 and 2016. I'll now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. Operator, we are now ready to take questions and we'll respond as appropriate.
Certainly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment for the first question. And our first question comes from the line of Mona Nazar from Laurentian Bank. Please proceed to question.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions.
Hi, Mona.
Hi. So my first question just surrounds the guidance and the $366 million in revenue. Is that conservative? Should I look at that as conservative? Did it change at all with the recent federal budget and the related reduction in planned near-term infrastructure spend? And just going a little bit more into the segments, do you continue to expect U.S. improvement kind of by mid-2018 and any additional color on U.K. activities in light of Brexit and what you're expecting there for the year? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mona. The yes, we do want to be conservative. And thus the guidance that we've offered. We, in light of the earlier comments, we do see continued strength in Canada with the qualifier that we're not seeing new commitments coming forward for infrastructure spend. In the United States, we're going through a reorganization and a refocus of the firm around intelligence buildings and infrastructure, and we see that that will take some time to achieve the results that we feel are necessary. And given the downturn last year in the United States, we don't see that we're going to have a significant the turnaround, not until the latter part of this year. The UK is certainly affected by Brexit and the uncertainty. We're seeing that many of our public sector clients just do not have the funding that they once had for at least public infrastructure like healthcare and schools. But we are diversifying and using those resources, as I had noted, to support initiatives elsewhere in areas of healthcare, for example, work that we're doing on the west coast of Canada. Our international business is very strong in almost every market that we're in, including India, the Middle East, Mexico, and Greece, and Israel. But we're just we are being conservative about what we anticipate then to be the overall growth. So that's sort of the context then to the modest growth forecast for the year. Mona,
that's great. And then just secondly, turning to your technology offering or the intelligence segment, and just wondering if you could speak a little bit about what you're seeing on the horizon there. You know, some of the larger comps have talked about technology being a disruptor for this sector, and you had in the past spoken about coupling some of your work in intelligence with the infrastructure and buildings units. Has any of that started to occur, or is intelligence still primarily kind of, you know, tolling traffic management services? And I'm not sure if you could give this, but of the 16% intelligence, kind of how much is that standalone or how much is correlated to the other segments?
Of the 16%, I would say all of it is still the traditional markets of tolling and traffic management. The pivot that we have mentioned on occasion is really in the works now, and it's all about... I mean, there are four themes to the pivot. The first is just taking technology into everything we do internally as well as for our clients to make us much more efficient. And there's much more to be said about that and applying technology in those areas, which and we'll be elaborating on that at the annual general meeting. The second area is taking software that we have and systems that we have and converting them more to software as a service. And there are four major announcements and launches that we'll have in 2018. But given the nature of those kinds of launches in the way we see that service going forward, it's going to take anywhere from 14 to 24 months before we really get traction because it will be much more of a technology profile in terms of with the real benefits being as you capture market share. So it'll be a while before we realize the full benefits of that. The third area is that of just engaging in all of the other technologies that are emerging that are going to have profound effects on what we do, be it blockchain, AI, big data, analytics, virtual reality. Some of that we're seeing now in terms of virtual reality and how for our condo market, as an example, we may not need to have our clients spend the money on sales centers, but a lot of the sales activity can be done through through augmented or virtual reality. And finally, the fourth area, and this is a little more of an outreach, is our engagement in the tech echo systems in Toronto, India, California, and elsewhere, where we will be engaging much more directly with all the new technology providers as well as startups, just because we need the leverage of working with all of these potential partners to be able to develop and take new products to market in a much faster way. And again, we won't see any significant impact on revenue. I wouldn't anticipate for again, 20 to 24 months.
Okay, that was great color. 20 to 24 months. Okay. And just lastly
I think one thing that needs to be elaborated is, you know, there's always a great focus on what are the margins. One of the things that happening across our industry is that there's a tremendous competition out there in the marketplace at the moment for the skilled, the best talent. And so Scott alluded to us making use of technology for internal processes in the way that we do our work. We're really moving forward aggressively on that because if you only have a finite number of dollars to spend on recruiting and retaining the best people to work for you, you've got to do everything else that you do in the most efficient manner you possibly can. So we're really looking at that as a primary source of improving efficiencies over the course of the next 12 to 24 months.
Actually, I should add one more comment on it, and that is that a traditional professional services operation like IBI in the architecture and engineering area, where your revenue is almost always driven by the number of people that you have and the margin that you get on the hours charged, our direction is really to become engaged with the clients throughout the assets that we design. We need something in the order of 6 to $12 billion a year being spent on capital infrastructure, and then we never see another penny after that's built. Our direction is to be part of that continuing life cycle, spend on those assets, and doing that with technology so it creates a much more of a smooth and continuous income stream, and it also establishes an ongoing and continuing relationship with our clients. So it becomes less of a business that's based on hours charged, but more a business based on IP and value created.
Okay. And just one kind of last housekeeping, and part of your answer actually flows into the next question. So we saw salaries and fees, that line item, increase about 2.8% for the year. I'm just wondering, what was your headcount at the beginning of the year? What's your headcount now? And what's your plans for 2018? And then on that, also, how has utilization rate trended? Thank you.
I don't have the information on the headcount change. It's been relatively modest.
Largely, Mona, it's fluctuated between 25 and 2,600 throughout the year, depending on the scope and scale of some of the larger transit projects we're working on.
Our utilization is very high, especially in Canada and internationally. It's it's above 80% utilization on staff.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. And our next question comes from the line of Michael Tupholm with TD Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, Mike.
The first question relates to the organic growth in Canada. We saw that slow in the fourth quarter relative to the kinds of growth rates we'd seen earlier in the year in 2017. Is that sort of low single-digit growth that we saw in the fourth quarter, is that how we should think about Canada in 2018 as well, or is there room for that to accelerate and pick back up?
I don't see that there'll be any thing that will trigger an accelerated growth profile in 2018 over those numbers, Michael. The infrastructure program is, as I mentioned earlier, still slow to come to fruition. There's still a lot of opportunities out there, but the decision making in the award process is quite slow. And we're not seeing anything of the announcements of the federal government. In fact, they seem to have scaled back on their expected spend profile. We do see continued stability and strength in our mixed-use high-rise and in our intelligence practice, but stable. We don't anticipate that it would be accelerated growth, anything above what you've seen in the last quarter.
Okay. So Scott, the projects that you were active on during 2017 in terms of some of the transit projects in particular, are most of those still ongoing throughout the year in 18, or is there anything actually anywhere where you're actually wrapping up work and projects are rolling off?
They are continuing in 2018. Change in the method of service. We have, for example, in the case of Eglinton, we will be midpoint this year, really scaling back on design and moving more into construction administrative services, but that will continue for some time throughout the construction phase of the project. Similarly, in the case of the Confederation Line and BRT, we're continuing with the construction supervision.
In terms of the gross margin, it was lower than I was expecting for the fourth quarter. You came in at 26.5%, and even if we just look at it relative to where you've been tracking, earlier in 2017 and even back to 2016, it strikes me as a little bit low. So, just wondering if there was anything in particular that was going on there that was pressuring that in the quarter, and then I guess sort of the follow-on to that is, you know, how do we think about that going forward?
Well, I mean, we didn't see anything unusual in the months of October and November, Mike, but the December, there seemed to be quite an inordinately long holiday period this year where there were not people working. And I think that really hammered us on the gross margin in the last month of the year. So, you know, occasionally every few years you run into one of these situations where everybody's holiday timetable in December tends to hit you in the margin. And I think that's what happened in 2017.
So I guess I'd maybe have to go take a look at the calendar, but assuming that doesn't happen again in late 2018, is it fair to expect 2018 to look more like you saw in 16 and even 15 in terms of a gross margin? So not, you know, not that additional pressure?
I think so, but I qualify that subject to, you know, what happens with some of these transit projects that are in the process of being, you know, where we're on bidding teams and that sort of thing. If some of those awards come in towards the end of the year, the last quarter will have a very different profile than if those are delayed into 2019. Because they tend to be the sorts of things, once the project is awarded, it's hurry, hurry, rush, rush to get the designs done. And so some of what you saw in 2016 was a direct reflection of that on projects like Eglinton and on Viva, where you know there was a tremendous amount of pressure to get work done and out the door, so that it didn't delay anybody's construction schedule.
The other thing that we would have seen in the last quarter of 2017 was a pretty significant and inordinate degree of effort put in on the bidding phase of a few projects, where the margin in the bid phase is much much smaller. So that would have been another contributing factor.
And if we think about the EBITDA margins in 2018, I'm not really hearing of any sort of major changes in the business, whether it be from a mix perspective or anything else. I mean, it sounds like some of this intelligence, the opportunities on that front will still take some time to play out. So would it be fair to think about 18 as being relatively stable from an EBITDA margin perspective, nothing that should swing that meaningfully up or down?
That's what we're seeing, Michael, and the once again, the qualifier will be what happens with transit projects in Canada and how quickly we make progress in turning operations in the United States back in the right direction. We have the leadership in place.
Steve, on this qualifier about Canadian transit, I mean, that's a source of potential upside as opposed to something that would weigh on the margins, no?
That's correct.
Right, okay. Okay, and then lastly, well, I guess two more. Just in terms of the intelligence initiatives you have on the go, a lot of detail, Scott, which was helpful. Are there any... sort of large investments that you're making to support that in the next, I guess, 12 to 18 months to get you to where you want to be?
Well, we have been making those investments over the past year in many cases. We have been astute about the investments, though. They're often done on the backs of existing projects. For example, our smart city platform that we're going to be launching this quarter is really built off of a smart city platform that we've developed for India that we're repurposing for Canada. So there is effort going into these new product developments, but we are managing it quite carefully.
Right. So no sort of no expectation of a step up. It's more of what you've already been doing that might carry on, but no, we're not hitting some kind of inflection point where all of a sudden you're going to have to be investing more than you have been?
I would say that is the case. We are looking, and we have set aside budget within our funds within the budget to support the launch of these new initiatives, which will be a different business arrangement. But we won't really be spending that until the latter part of the year. We're hopeful that we'll start to see some revenue pick up in those areas as a result of the groundwork that we have done already.
That's helpful. Thank you. And then lastly, Steve, just in terms of the changes in non-cash working capital, the fourth quarter, normally you see an inflow, and you did this Q4 as well, but it was a little less than we've seen in the past. I guess sort of two questions. Number one, is there anything going on in particular that would explain that you want to call out? And then secondly, just how do we think about changes in non-cash working capital in 2018?
Well, I think you need to look last year, Michael, at last year I loosened up the purse strings quite a bit in terms of paying suppliers and subcontractors who'd been real good to us when our bank lines were a little more tight. We now have plenty of financing to see the business going forward. But that's not to say that I'm loosening up the purse strings anymore. So I wouldn't expect to see a reduction in payables or any of the things on the liability side of the balance sheet going down as much as they did through 2017. And so any movements in operating working capital will likely be far more modest. They're planned to be far more modest than what happened in 2017. It's more of a business steady state going forward, where we've found a run rate in terms of how quick we collect cash and how quickly we pay bills. So
fairly neutral. I mean, given the top line guidance, I mean, fairly neutral changes for the year would be a reasonable expectation.
That's correct.
Yep. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Frederic Bastien from Raymond James. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Frederic.
I just want to touch on the recent U.S. tax cuts. Can you tell us approximately what that means for your business in terms of paying taxes in the U.S. on a go-forward basis?
The answer to that is that we're still utilizing tax losses, particularly in many of the states where we do business in the U.S., some on the federal. So in terms of cash tax expense, the impact will be fairly neutral for the next 18 to 24 months. We had set up in the balance sheet at the end of 16, we'd set up a deferred tax asset, which had to be adjusted because of the decrease in tax rates, which resulted in a $1.4 million increase in our tax rate. But I think that for the next 18 to 24 months, the U.S. tax will not be a significant consideration. I think what will be more of a consideration is, Scott had mentioned that some of our other international business, the Middle East not so much from a tax perspective, but certainly India has a higher tax rate, and we're doing much better in India than we ever were before. So some of those will move the dial a little bit more on the tax expense than the U.S. situation.
Thanks. And is there a tax rate that you would guide us towards for this year?
Yeah, I think if you went with 27 or 28% overall tax charge, you'd be in the right ballpark.
Okay, thanks. Another one is on the renegotiated leases. What will this have on rent going forward?
The answer is that we provided for in the $5.3 million that we have now on the balance sheet for that one onerous lease will cover us off basically to the 2024 when that lease comes to an end. So what you will see is approximately $22.5 million of rental expense that we have what I would call the normal rental expense is going to go up over time in accordance with what general rental rates in the offices, places where we do business. But you're not going to see the sudden ballooning of rent expense that you saw 2017 over 2016. That was all that extra $3 million we had to put aside.
Okay, that's helpful. Super. And lastly, when you you mentioned we want to get into the life cycle, where do you specifically yourself getting increased exposure? Obviously, very active early in the stage, but are we talking about O&M, getting more active and doing O&M work, or if you could give us more color on that, it'd be great.
The it is really part of asset management and asset control. The on the $6 to $10-12 billion of investment that we design, capital investment that we design every year. So we as an example, we create these BIM models, which is really nothing more than data, and then we hand it over to the client. The way that's set up in the design construct these days, though, it's data that then informs our asset management system, and we have an asset management system that we had developed some time ago that we're repurposing to provide as a service, software as a service, to our clients so that they can use the system to then manage those assets, deal with faults, failures, replacements, repairs, providing them with a complete management information service on those assets throughout that life cycle. So it would be using software then to be part of the continuing platform, continuing operation of the asset. And we are also making an investment now and working with a partner in the United States to go beyond just the assets management, if you will, the financial sort of information on the assets, but also to get into the operations of those facilities. So using technology more to monitor pumps, valves, and other aspects of the operation of the assets we or the buildings we design. So to all with a view to then reducing the cost of the operation, reducing the energy consumption, emissions, or whatever it might be. So that's the direction on the asset management side of all this capital infrastructure that we design.
Okay. Thanks for the call, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of John Novak with CCL. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, Scott and Steve, can you give us a sense of what the capital spending will be like next year?
Yeah, John, anticipating about $10.5 million. It's going up from the 5.3 that we had this year because we've got some offices where the leases are turning over and there's some CapEx that needs to be spent on new office space, the principal of which is right in your neighborhood in Vancouver. So,
all right, and what's your appetite for acquisitions these days, or is everything still very much internally focused?
I think, you know, we'd said that we wanted to get to certain debt levels. We're not that far off of the debt levels we talked about. What we will be doing is any acquisitions that come along will have to be extremely strategic and largely focused around, we talked about adding a greater technology component to all of the services that we're offering. Any acquisitions will likely be focused around furthering that objective.
And thank you. And with all the focus on the technology-type platforms, what does that do with respect to the amount of reoccurring revenue that you start to generate from the investments?
It will increase percentage-wise the reoccurring revenue that we will have. And our basic reference is our current intelligence practice where, wherever we put in a system, we typically then realize about anywhere from 4 to 8% of that initial investment cost as a recurring annual revenue stream. And and that continues typically throughout the life of the system. And so we have systems that have been installed that go back 20 years of just creating a continuing revenue stream. And it's not only that, it's a continuing revenue stream for maintenance and operations, but we, because we're also there and have the continuing relationship with the client, we are the ones that the clients then go to for any upgrades, enhancements, extensions, if you will, of the systems. So that's really illustrative of the model that we want to apply much more extensively throughout the firm, but also morphing to more of software as a service. So I mean our target is that we would be able to realize, and I won't use any percentages at the moment because we're still going through some modeling, but let's just leave it at a significant percentage of the systems and services that we provide would be more of a continuing revenue stream.
Okay. And lastly, is it just to remind me, is it 2x leverage that was the goal that you're hoping to achieve?
We were striving for between 2 and 2.5 times.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
I will turn the call back over to you, Mr. Stewart, for your closing remarks.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody for being on the call, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a great day.